The other thing that takes it even to a higher level that we talk about in the book is the role of the leader is not only to realize that they shouldn't do all the talking, but they should look for the people who aren't talking around the room, and they should invite them and make it safe for them to bring out their ideas. And it may take a little coaxing at that time, but I've found some of the most brilliant things come out of people's mouths who are seemingly the most quiet people. But when you give them a chance in a safe environment, you really get some contributions that you weren't expecting at all. And that's where the magic comes from.
So I have a number of sponsors, affiliate links, in the way that it's set up, that have kindly allowed me to share their services, really. The first one is Mike Kling, and Mike runs PM online PM courses, and it is a great resource for getting those fundamentals of project management trained, reasonably priced, and Mike presents it in an accessible and clear manner. You can check out some of his videos on his YouTube channel and kind of give you a view of where they are. But the code for that, if you go to nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses, all one word, lowercase, that'll redirect you to it. There's varying different levels that you can buy. You can buy individual courses, you can buy pathways as well, if you like. And I get a kickback off those. Mike kindly shares me that. So if you do jump on and use it, I hope you find it really useful. I think he has money back guarantees and things like that as well. So there's a very limited risk on that. So jump on that. And that again is nigelcreaser.com/onlinepmcourses. And enjoy. Get a countdown. There we go. Hi. Today, I am delighted to welcome two people to the show this time. Bob DeCook and Phil Clampett. Bob has devoted his career to leadership roles, refining his own skills and mentoring hundreds of aspiring leaders. His passion for people and for extraordinary outcomes is what drives him, rising to senior executive roles in the numerous organizations. Bob's developed and put into practice many teachings in his books. He has over four decades of experience across major market sectors, the construction services, retail, estate development, pulp and paper industry, beverage industry and chemical industry. And he served on the boards of US organizations for profit and non-profit, including a major international corporation. And Phil is the Blair Endowed Chair of Communications at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. He's previously designated the Heinrichsen Named Professor of Business, and Phil's won the numerous awards for his teachings and scholarship. His students started calling him Dr. So What, because he asked so what so often, as a prod to encourage them to think about the implications of their ideas. And he's got a website, www.drsowhat.com. The Wall Street Journal and MIT Sloan Review highlighted his work on decision downloading, which details how companies can effectively communicate decisions to those not involved in decision-making processes. We're going to be talking about their book a little bit today. For those on the video, you can see it there, Leading with Care in a Tough World, Beyond Servant Leadership. And I picked up one thing from your guys' website on that, was the fact that the Gallup survey that said over 90% of employees surveyed believe their leadership lacked communication skills to lead. And basically, it's disappointing that leaders can do better. And that's why you wrote the book. So, guys, thank you for coming on the show. I am really intrigued about how, as a leader myself, and I've witnessed good communication, poor communication. So it's going to be a fascinating talk. So welcome to the show. Do you want to tell us a little bit more background about you two?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Nigel. We're very pleased to be here with you today. So as you said, I'm the executive or businessman part of this partnership. It's actually a partnership that stretches back some 30 years, actually. We met 30 years ago, and Phil can talk to you a little bit about how that happened. But he did some consulting for me, and we started to think about writing. So we wrote two previous books together. He's written other books. But I'm kind of the corporate practitioner. He's the scholar in all of this. And that tension has been very important to thinking through and learning a lot about leadership together. We've written, we've practiced, we've consulted on leadership. And this last book, this latest book, Leading with Care in a Tough World, is our current contribution to the cause. So we're really excited about it.
Brilliant.
No? Yeah, I met Bob years ago. I was a young professor and just got my PhD, so I was pretty cocky, like a lot of young professors are. And and Bob called and asked me to come down and talk to their team, and Bob in particular, about how to do communication audits. And I had studied with the world's best on this topic, and it was just developing. And so I presented all my stuff, and I thought, wow, I really wowed him. And then Bob looked around and asked a question to me at that time. He said, Phil, or maybe he called me Dr. Clampett at the time, and said, you know, what does a world-class communication system look like? And I had no idea. I had just been through my comprehensive exams, and I mean, I had an idea, but I had never been asked that question. I thought I'd been put through the ringer with a dissertation. And I was, I went from a 10 walking in there to about a 1 walking out. And I thought there's no way he's ever going to call me again because I stumbled through the answer. But one of the geniuses of Bob is he sees potential in people. And frankly, it shows a tolerance for uncertainty to say that, you know, the person you bring in as the quote unquote expert doesn't have to have all the answers, but can still provide value and can still provide insight as you work through it together. And so that was the beginning. And he called back and I was able to do a lot of work on various projects. And since then we started taking it to the next level of saying, not only how do we assess effectiveness of communication, but how do we build a robust leadership culture that is engaging and addresses some of the statistics you started the show with.
Brilliant. That sounds like a daunting prospect there when you're walking in your first role and doing something like that and you get asked a question you don't know. It's always difficult in any situation when you're with a stakeholder or customer or whatever and they ask a question, you sit there just going, I really haven't got a clue what the answer to this is. But I suppose, as you said there, the thing is the answer quite often I've had to say, I don't know, but I can work it out or find out. That's probably the fundamental part, isn't it?
That's really the key to everything. The syndrome of having to be the smartest person in the room or thinking that you need to be the smartest person in the room as a leader is a deadly syndrome. It shuts everybody else up and it doesn't get any new ideas into the thinking. And we have that all over the place these days. So,
yeah, it's something that I'm as you can probably gather from having the podcast, I like to hear the sound of my own voice. I do like to talk and I do find myself sometimes, and I've just been on some training actually based out of, connected with Harvard managemental process around something I realize is that I quite often get in a situation where I'll try and solve the problem with the team and I'll be the one that's talking at the front and kind of putting my opinion forward and putting my ideas forward. And I really kind of sat back and think, actually, I need to shut my mouth sometimes and actually listen to that team and recognize that and they're all very talented and bright people and kind of go, right, tell me what needs to be done rather than me suggesting. I think I'm suggesting. But then when you're in that kind of, in quotes, more in the hierarchy, people can sit there and go, well, that's what we've got to do then, because there's that role power that's implicit in there.
Yeah.
And it's something I've always I struggle with, I think.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. We all do. I do, even after writing all about it. But the other thing that takes it even to a higher level that we talk about in the book is the role of the leader is not only to realize that they shouldn't do all the talking, but they should look for the people who aren't talking around the room, and they should invite them and make it safe for them to bring out their ideas. And it may take a little coaxing at that time, but I've found some of the most brilliant things come out of people's mouths who are seemingly the most quiet people. But when you give them a chance in a safe environment, you really get some contributions that you weren't expecting at all. And that's where the magic comes from.
Nigel, the other part of it, I think that you put your finger on, it's really hard for a lot of people, and you're talking about your own kind of, I don't want to call it anxiety, but queasiness about, you know, not offering your opinion and stepping back and doing what Bob suggested, is our notion of leadership competence today is almost always driven by, here's a leader who made a great decision, or here's a leader who acted with great confidence in the midst of uncertainty. And we don't really praise the leaders who have a competency for bringing people together and coming out as a team. And there's not a lot of language around that, A. And B, there's not a lot of like, wow, you are really incredible at facilitating it. I remember years ago, I watched one of my professors work a room, my mentor actually, work a room at the university where I was at. And my jaw dropped at the end of this, because he was able to facilitate the bringing together of all these different opinions to emerge into some sort of reasonable consensus. And yet nobody in the room, and these were all esteemed professors from all around the university, no one in the room saw that but me.
Yeah.
And I think that shows that there's a lack of appreciation, number one. And number two, there's a lack of language about that. And then finally, there's a lack of, you know, praise that's associated with that, that a lot of people just don't get because it's more subtle. And so I think the queasiness that you were talking about, or whatever you want to call it, anxiety, is that tension between what a leader is supposed to do versus what we're advocating leader, really good leaders do.
Yeah.
In the second, just to add a little bit to that, Nigel, in the second half of the book where we talk about important practices, we'll get into that idea in a minute, but practices, we actually lay out a formula of what we call, or the categories of what we call visible practices and subtle practices in each of the different chapters. And the reason for that is just what Phil said. As people are observing conditions in a leader's behavior, there are some things that are very visible to people and they get it right away. There are other things that are more important that leaders do very subtly to draw out the opinions and to draw out the communications and to establish relationships, and that most people would never observe, but they're so important in the finessing of leadership responsibility. And that's a lot of what's missing and what's generating these terrible statistics that we're getting on leadership performance.
Yeah, it's interesting, because it's the thing that first pops into my head there is it pops in there. A thing that I always think about is the styles of leadership styles, the DISC model, which is one that I'm sure you guys have heard of, which is one that I particularly feel comfortable with, those four different styles of management of communication, really, and behaviors. And those two outgoing ones, the high D, the high I's, it's kind of the razzmatazz, isn't it? It's the newsworthy behaviors, and that's where I think, whereas you've got those subtle team builders or those subtle people who are detail orientated, who aren't stood up on the stage doing a little dance or charging around making people do stuff quickly, they don't get noticed. And those tools and techniques used aren't seen as key to being a good leader. And you see, right, if I'm going to be a big leader, and I'm guilty of it myself, is I want to be someone at the front, someone driving, rather than someone in the background. Although it's that kind of allowing your team to shine without you being part of that team. As a project manager, it's that thing, if it's wrong, it's my fault. If the project is going down the pan, it's my fault. If it's going well, the team's doing a really good job. And having that mindset sometimes isn't seen newsworthy. It's that whole thing, isn't it? It's the good practice management is, in quotes, boring. If you're doing it well and you're doing it sensibly, it's boring. It's only when there's things that are over the top or loud or something's gone red on a project, you've got to sort it. That's where people see the news. Whereas the real 90% of it's quite quiet and boring, isn't it?
Well, it's quiet and boring, but it brings people together. It makes them feel like they're the contributors, which is exactly what you want. Yeah. Because if they see only the boss can contribute, it doesn't light them up. It doesn't turn them on. You miss a lot of contribution from that.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. I've been shut down in meetings by people, and I've just disengaged. Certain ways, the way that it's been done sometimes, I just go, okay, fine, all right, you carry on then. And it's been in a situation where I'm usually someone who, as I say, I like the sound of my own voice. I will talk a lot. I will throw ideas. I don't mind getting things wrong. So I'm quite comfortable being in that VUCA environment, as they call these days. But I will get shut down by some people because you're not getting that voice and not being given a chance to do it. Now, sometimes it's right. I need to stop because I've said too much.
It's interesting. Absolutely right. You mentioned in your intro one of the statistics from the Gallup you quoted on communications, that 70% of people said their leaders don't have the communication skills to lead. There's two other companion statistics that we should surface that we also talk about in the book, that 15%, at least in the U.S. now, I don't know that I can extend it to England and Europe and other parts of the world, but probably can. 15% of people feel truly engaged in their organization. 15%. And 70% say they would work harder if they felt more appreciated. Now, if that statistic is anywhere near close to what's happening, these are the people who are saying they're overworked now, but 70% say they would work harder if they felt more appreciated, plus the communication statistic. And those are pre-pandemic numbers. They're worse after the pandemic. And these statistics are not just taken just recently. They've been taken for a number of years, and they're getting worse. They're not getting any better. So if all these leadership models that we're talking about and using were working, how in the world would we have these kind of statistics coming from people being led? And we can't accept that. I mean, there's so much contribution lost that we must change the platform. And we think the idea of leaders' role is to care about people and outcomes and make sure that their focus is on those two things rather than on themselves or on some razzmatazz, as you put it, is a very important path forward.
Yeah, that's it. It's really interesting, those stats. I just ask you both there on that one. How much there are always going to be people in an organization who will not feel engaged. There's people in any community that will be part of a community, but not wouldn't describe themselves as engaged. They may benefit from it. They may contribute to it. It's a difficult question to ask, but maybe talk about how you find out. But if we're saying 15% engagement, what does good look like? That we assume is bad. What does good look like? 100% sounds unrealistic, doesn't it? Having 100% of people saying they're engaged. But
unrealistic and the degree of engagement, I think, is also important. And that's, you know, something that would have to be measured carefully and differently. But let's say that we could shift the engagement from 15% to 50% or 70%. That should not be an unrealistic goal. To get 70% or 65% of people feeling like, gosh, I like it around here and I want to pull for this organization. And there's still room to improve, but just think of what could happen versus 15%.
To my thought, Phil, what do you think?
No, I agree with that. But also you think about the people that aren't engaged. If you start to engage them, and then there are the people that are the late adopters to engagement, we'll see that those people that used to be not engaged, but now they're engaged, that will act as a persuasive cascade throughout the organization. And that's what you're trying to do. And I think that's what Bob is kind of is really skilled at doing, is it's a persuasive cascade of being able to engage a group of people that maybe weren't formally engaged. And then those people in turn engage other people that are more likely. You can change that dynamic in an organization. I oftentimes think that's one of the key skill sets when you bring in a new leader of any sort.
I think there's another aspect, Nigel, to this as well. And we talk about it in a chapter in the second part of the book. And that's a concept we say, you've got to meet people where they are. We always want to find those superstars that are self-actualized and work on their own and can see the vision easily and develop their own plans. And boy, we're excited to have them. And they tend to be the future leaders. But not everybody's built that way. And some people need a little more direction. And some people need a little more coaching. And some people are self-actualized just by doing the worker bee stuff that has to be done every day, the routine stuff, but they're damn good at it. And if we try to take those people and expect them to be the visionary leader that's self-actualized on things that are, you know, quite uncertain when they first get into them, they may fail because they're not wired that way. So match the work to the capabilities of the people and meet them where they are and help them see that they can do really great things and recognize them for what they do every day. And you'll get tremendous engagement and contribution from people that you never expected.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there's round peg, square hole scenario, isn't there? Sometimes you see it with people who have been lifted to a position because of their skill and moved into management. I know it's an old cliche in many ways, but quite often that will be the case where someone who is incredibly talented at what they do get moved into a position and moved away from that talent that they're good at and do not perform at that next level because he's not doing what they want to do or that slightly different approach. And I think I wonder whether organizationally, and I've seen this with a few other organizations where the way that some organizations recruit is really hard to get into those organizations. And it's not about how good you are. It's not about how talented you are. although those play part, they want high talent in those organizations. It's about whether you fit properly with that organization's culture, that organization's perceived attitude and behaviors of someone within their organization. And I wonder whether with your guys, with your research and with, experience, whether you've seen where you've got organizations that are, for want of a better word, really picky at who they bring into their organization. Is that engagement higher? Obviously, the leaders in there influence that as well. If you've got a bad leader in there somewhere, but you've got brilliant people and they will remove that engagement. Do those organizations tend to be at a higher percentage than others?
Well, I think they can be, but there's a danger as well. They can be because everybody lines themselves up behind, quote, the same culture, the same values, but it creates the symmetry to everything, and you don't get as much diverse thought, right?
Yeah.
And you know, these days, diversity is such a popular word, and the word is misunderstood, we think, in a lot of ways. There's a chapter in the book about how we define diversity, and it's more about diversity in culture, diversity in thought, diversity in ideas. And it's those things that you need to appreciate and bring together. And the leader's job is to bring those differences together and value the differences to the point where the different kinds of ideas can be not only surfaced, but appreciated by the people with another point of view. And that skill, that subtle skill, is so important for leaders. And if we focus more on the diversity issue with regard to those kinds of things, as opposed to color and race and sex and every other category we create for ourselves, we would be a lot further ahead.
Yeah, because it's accepting someone else where they are with a different opinion to you and a different experience to you and a different thought set. And all of those diversity with a big D, classification categories, all of those bring with that a different experience, a different mindset, and a different just different ways of thinking, don't they? And it's that's where that kind of two things. So it is, and it doesn't matter. It's about treating everyone the same. It's about treating those ideas and letting them come there. Another great sponsor of the show, it comes in the form of Air Manual. Air Manual is it's a tool for documenting process, which and best practices. It's a company formed by a guy, one of my interviewees, Alexis Kingsbury. I kind of summarized why my view of where we see documentation, a lot of my experience has been people will document something, a process, they'll put it in a Visio diagram that gets loaded onto a SharePoint site or something similar, and then a bunch of that. So then once that diagram's been shared with senior management, they're happy they have a process in the business. But then the detailed procedures underneath it might be with documents in just poorly kept and not linked easily and not updated. And what Air Manual does, it allows you to put in it's a tool for doing this kind of thing. You whack it in, the service in there, get in there, put in your process, your flow, and you build it down to as low a level of detail, even to the point of checklists where people can check off they've done it. So it creates that guided checklists, easy to create, easy to maintain, and all in one place. And no one's kind of rooting around to find the SharePoint. And then when you change to new SharePoint services and all that stuff, it's all there. So if you pop along to nigelcreaser.com/airmanual, there's a bit more detail there and a link there to click on to go and get. I think they offer a trial and things like that. So it's something that I think can easily reduce the amount of errors, rework, etc. within our organization. So take a look. Hope you enjoyed that. But you're thinking, ooh, I wonder what the next bit's going to be. Yeah, it's frustrating, isn't it? You heard at the beginning of the show where I said there's a way around that. So if you're really itching and you want to hear the next bit of this show, jump down to Patreon, have a look, find the one that's got a little lock on it, click on it, and you'll be able to get the second half along with the first half all together. And you won't get this annoying bit or the annoying bit at the beginning that I just done as well. So, yeah, give it a go. It's only a price of a coffee. Cheers. So this is my final wrap-up. Every week you're going to hear this. You're going to get bored of it, but you can always click next podcast if so. If you have enjoyed it, if you listen to this podcast to the end of this show and you think, that was great, I'd love to be able to help Nige out. There are loads of ways you can do it. The first and obvious way is to share the podcast. Send it out to people. If you know colleagues and friends who'd benefit from it, you think they'd enjoy it, just send them the link. Grab one of the links or send them to www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. That's www.nigelcreaser.com/podcasts. And that will push them over to a Linktree link, and it's got all of the different ways they can consume the podcast. If you are feeling generous and have a big bag of cash, you could grab a copy of one of my books. Obviously, they're available in all the usual places, and print and digital. Again, jump on the website, www.nigelcreaser.com/shop, and that will give you a list of all the different ways that you can contribute and grab copies of the book. Also got links to all my guests' books on there as well, where I get a little bit of a kickback from them. If you are of a sporting mind, I have a number through doing some of my judo and running antics. I've managed to secure a few affiliate links and affiliates there as well. So in there, somewhere in the sponsors page, there's links to those as well. So clicking onto those and grabbing if you're looking to get super fit, then that would be fabulous as well, and I get a little kickback from those. I have a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/sundaylunchpm. So again, you can ping something in there, buy me a coffee or whatever. And finally, obviously the most important is coming back, listen again, because the more of you that come back, the more visibility I get, because there's more times that it's downloaded and all the SEO works and things like that. So yeah, that's it. So if you can help me out, I would be much appreciated. If you can't, don't worry about it. Thank you very much. Cheers now. Bye. My latest, the latest affiliate that I've got on the show now is Riverside. I use Riverside to do my interviews, Riverside FM. it kind of offers you a whole, if you like, micro studio management producer tool, and goes beyond that. Has a really good free layer, and I've been using it for a while now. I find it really good. When I've had issues, even though I'm not on one of the higher paid levels, the support has been quick, responsive, and of high quality, and people keen to help me. The organization seems really good, the product seems really intuitive, and quality is really good as well. And it's a clever way of doing it is when you're recording through your browsers, so you've not got loads of desktop resources being used compared to some other products that I've used. And what they also do is they do they stream a lower quality version of it up onto as you're doing the interview, so you're not burning bandwidth while you're doing the interview and potentially impacting on the quality of the conversation. And then at the end, it uploads it, the higher quality from your browser. I mean, it's just a really good way of doing it. So If you are thinking of doing a podcast and you're supposed to do a podcast, I would recommend using this tool. I found it really good. Best of the tools that I've tried using to date. And you can get that at nigelcreaser.com/riverside, and that will redirect you to my kickback page on their site, and there I will get a little kickback from them. So take a look. Thanks. Well, it's goodbye from me, Nigel Creaser, and it's goodbye from him, the Sunday Lunch PM. Goodbye.